The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of On the Rag. I'm having a rage attack, but that's just me. Joined as always by the wonderful Leonie Hayden.
Kia ora.
Now Spinoff employee. Are we allowed to announce that?
Yeah,
it's too late.
Not? She's in the building all the freaking time.
Full time, and not just because she's in an office next door.
Nope.
She's actually in our precinct and in a spin, bloody, what's this called? On the Rag Fest. It's Madeline Chapman.
Talofa.
Who is also going to be producing today and eating munchkins at the same time.
Yeah, so if it sounds shit, that's why.
It's all right. You can only have one or the other. And I prefer the good chat, so
yeah,
don't need to hear it.
Mads has had to sit here silently producing our podcast and absorbing our shit.
She knows.
Such a long time. Now she gets to come out from behind the soundboard.
She knows how it goes. So we are eating munchkins today and having some small bottles of Prosecco.
Tiny.
Oh.
How much is in this?
It's I would say it's one and a bit standard drinks. I'm already nearly at the bottom, but that's neither here nor there. And the reason I bring up these brand names is because we are now Sol's sponsor. Lovely people at Bon. The contract is finished with them. So I'm going to start the podcast with a slightly desperate plea. If anyone out there likes what we're doing and wants to support what we do or would like us to read out an ad about your mattress cover or whatever it is that the fancy pod is, that what they do in the fancy podcast?
Yeah, a lot of mattresses.
A lot of mattresses, a lot of Squarespace web design.
A lot of Squarespace.
MeUndies.
Bonobos. They get a lot.
All of those.
Online clothing.
Yeah.
But we're going to start with Dunkin' Donuts if anyone from there is listening. That would be really good. But
yeah.
Otherwise, it's all good.
We can just think of all kinds of ways of seamlessly blending your product into our podcast.
Delicious, special, limited edition, Jaffa Munchkin. We've been raving about it. Anyway, so where do we want to start? It's been a month, right? It was quiet, and then I feel like just in the past week, even on the spin-off, we've all had kind of to deal with big blow-ups that have happened about pieces
we've written,
about things to do with women, or bad men, or a combination of the two.
Mm.
So should we start with Mads, maybe, because yours was the first,
yeah,
which was the piece that you wrote about Alan Duff's great column, The Herald.
Yes. Great slash
great
rambly piece of
just not making sense in any way.
It wasn't even good enough to be described as a stream of consciousness. It was like a random word simulator, kind of.
It's like a bot.
It's a Mad Lib.
A Duff bot.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, Alan Duff, who is a regular columnist for The Herald, right?
Once a week. And of course, you know, award-winning author
of
Once Were Warriors and What Becomes of the Brokenhearted.
Wrote a column. So keep in mind those titles, but also keep in mind the title, Shrieking is No Laughing Matter.
It's a good title. I don't know who came up with it, but it's good.
We basically went on kind of just a long rant about women who laugh too loud, I think. Is that kind of what you got from it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different readings of it. I don't know. Mad, what was the thing that struck you first?
It was more just, I sort of sympathised at just like a 1%, because he has like a column, like a regular column. And I feel like if I had to write about something regularly and have a strong opinion on something every week, I would start resorting to just like, this little shit walked across, you know, in front of me totally. On the street, and now here's 800 words about why that's bad. So I feel like he just did that.
He's a man with a deadline and a word count and nothing to say.
Mm. And then, you know, people say, well, use your real life. And he then sort of took like four separate incidences from his real life that didn't really have anything to do with each other and managed to, well, he didn't really manage, but he just chucked them in together, talking to a cleaner, being on the train, being at a bar. They were all completely separate things.
Just attributing really wild things to like these strange characters in his column, like how the Samoan cleaner that he talked to was a proper Kiwi, and like, you know, and like rugby fans. It was just very strange. His idea of what makes a real Kiwi or a respectable person are quite strange.
It's very one... very one-dimensional. Yeah. It's sort of, the less you say to me, the more I like you. Like, the less I know you exist, the more Kiwi you are, basically.
There's also, lest we forget, his comments on the quote-unquote not hot TV presenter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. TV presenters are getting too big for their boots.
Just kind of halfway through, he just zigzags again off somewhere else and starts talking about... the way presenters get excited and use emotion.
And she laughs a lot, god damn it.
And they were laughing about an anecdote that one of their colleagues had been voted for the hottest new presenter on television. :, she is not hot. How did that get published anywhere?
Yeah,
it's really good.
It's just also especially galling that they laid off so many great columnists from the Herald last year. Like Dieter Bunny and like they did that big... you know, like clean out.
What's the
really
problem though? They
incredible,
were not hot.
Like experts. They just left this guy in there.
But I guess
maybe they forgot about him.
But I guess it's like when you read an opinion column, you want it to be a strong opinion. Like you don't want to read someone sort of just going, it's about right or maybe not, I don't know. So even if they're wrong, I think people want to just read, even if it's a train wreck of a strong opinion.
And that was probably one of his most read columns ever, right? Because everyone's just sharing it going, what the fuck is that
exactly. What's wrong with this guy?
And that,
I guess it's like if he doesn't care that everyone thinks he's like got maybe the worst opinions ever.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the Herald are like, well, they seem to be targeting him mostly, so we'll just rake in those clicks and move on.
Yeah. Whereas as an editor, my problem is absolutely with the Herald and not as much with Ellen Duff, because I can excuse opinions that I don't agree with, but I cannot excuse bad writing. And despite the fact that he's an award-winning fiction author, these are terribly written. They are like they've been written by 16-year-olds who don't know how to stick with a thread, that don't know how to develop a narrative. It is shocking to me that this guy is a published author. And today's column that he published... is no better.
Was it?
There's
was it today
like
or yesterday?
16 different ideas,
and then
like
plane
in the
ride.
Penultimate paragraph, he mentions like that we'll have a new government soon, and then that's the end of the. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, that one is worthy of the same level of outrage, but I haven't seen it thrown around as much. So he basically wrote this long column complaining about.
It's because the headline is just about long haul flights, and everyone looks at the headline and goes, "Oh, I hate long haul flights too."
Yeah, me
I get
too.
It.
Me too, Alan.
I mean, in this one though, he's swapped out shrieking women for fat people.
Yeah,
so in it, he's basically annoyed that when his meal arrives, the fat person he's sitting next to's meal also arrives because he had been hoping that the fat person wasn't going to have. A meal, I suppose, in the hope that it would help them shrink slightly more during the course of the flight.
So their leg could stop touching.
So he wouldn't have to sit next to as much of a fat person as when they took off. I don't even know. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It is very funny to be so sort of like, I don't know, maybe confident in your influence that you think if you don't order a meal, the person next to you is going to sense the sort of alpha influence and be like, I also should not order a meal.
And then also, like, through the magic of science, start, like,
shrinking
disappearing
into
under their clothes, leaving just their shoes behind.
But what if it's like, maybe I can instill the idea that you can miss a meal you know, and then this person, it just gets ingrained in their mind and they wander off with it.
Yeah. Making the world a better place.
Yeah, like if I go for a run in front of this person, they're going to see me and then they're also going to think, yes, I should also.
He just starts slowly like lifting weights. Like, have you ever thought?
He puts on some sort of sports movie on his screen.
Yeah, it's a, and this isn't the first or the last example of men getting giant platforms who might not necessarily deserve them anymore. Leonie, you went to Chris Rock Spark Arena, and you wrote about that as well.
Yeah.
So how was that?
Yeah, it was a really strange experience. The last third, I guess, was either about or heavily influenced by a very bitter recent divorce Chris Rock has gone through. And it's really weird when people decide to take those kinds of experiences and just apply them to everyone in the world instead of speaking about them like personal anecdotes. So this experience that he had gone through basically turned into all men act like this and all women act like this. And the thing that all women act like is gold diggers. And like, okay, so maybe because he's like a super rich dude and he only likes hot gold diggers, maybe that's his experience with women. But he absolutely framed it like that was the universal experience of all men, that they were only valued for their money and that women were these weird, shallow, manipulative, like, bloodsuckers with no financial independence. It was so weird. And it was, you know, compounded by the fact that I spent a fucking $140 on that ticket to be told that I just, that, like, some guy probably gave it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Doesn't sound very funny.
It just wasn't. And
it was definitely was the least funny. It sort of got less and less funny.
Oh, yeah, because Mab was there as well.
But the laughs weren't strong, right? Like
no, and I was there.
The laughs for the two opening acts were way stronger. And, like, I mean, despite the, like, raging misogyny, like, I'm pretty sure that that's 100% true, right? Like,
yeah. No, the first guy was very funny. I liked him.
I missed him.
Oh, he was really good.
Yeah. The Australian guy I saw.
The Australian guy started off, like, a bit slow, and we were like, oh, here we go. And then by the end of it, he was great.
He was killing it.
Yeah. And then Chris Rock started off great, and then
that's
just
not how that's supposed to work.
Off.
No, it's not. Not for that much money.
Yeah. But, like, I went with a bunch of my flatmates who were all guys my age.
Yeah.
And they were, like, absolutely loving the opener, loving the start. And then I was thinking, oh, because when they started joking about, like, women, they sort of did that joking, because they're all smart guys, so they sort of did that joking, like, oh, you know, am I right? You know, when he was joking about women being, you know, whatever. And then after, like, 5 minutes, even they were kind of like, oh, all right, like, we get it. It's getting a bit old.
Yeah.
So was anyone really into it?
I mean, I was surrounded by people laughing.
People were laughing.
But also, you get into the habit of laughing once you get to a live comedy show. Like, you can leave later and be like, eh, that wasn't that good, but you still, like, laugh.
You paid your money, you get a laugh.
The whole time. But I've been to, like open mic nights that I laughed at harder than, you know, Chris Rock.
God.
Yeah, were you a little lazy, I reckon.
Were you still there when he said that line? You know, there's, like, takeaway lines that clearly is, like, a big sort of punch line, I guess, where he was like, guys, listen to me, you're all one job away from being single or something, which is basically like, if you don't have a job, no woman's going to stay with a man if they, like, lose a job or something.
Right.
And it was just this weird, but it wasn't the other way around or anything.
Yeah.
It was just, it wasn't like everyone's one job away from being, it was no men.
Yeah, really you keep, specific.
You keep that job. You ever wanted to go quit, but then you remember that, you know, you have to keep. It's just like, no.
And just really insistent that, like, it's good for couples to, like, have regular sex, but mostly just so that women either A, have something to hold back if they need to punish their husbands or boyfriends.
Because that's all they can offer.
Yeah, that's the only reason for having sex is basically to keep a man in line.
Mm.
Like, he really, like, really tried to, you know, I was going to say ram that one home, but that's quite an inappropriate phrase. But he just said it a lot. There were a lot of jokes about, like, just...
Yeah, it was a lot of that.
Has he always been like this, or is this just because he's, like, been burned recently and is lashing out?
I have no idea.
Well, that's what it
avoided
seems...
him a little bit due to some other problematic stand-up I saw, like... Honestly, like a decade ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've appreciated him other things. He's great in, as a zebra. And I guess Everybody Hates Chris was fine. I mean, I can't say I've ever watched it, but...
Well, there's always that thing with comedians where people say you can... Well, even, like, leaders, you know, like, activists and stuff. It's like they'll be really good in one area and then quite bad in another area.
Yeah, sure.
Or, like, you know, someone will be very good with woman diversity and all that, but then, oh, they say something racist.
Yeah, yeah.
And then vice versa. And it's
why,
like, why can't anyone just sort of not be...
not be a douche?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess there is also... I feel like there's a growing pressure on comedians to be, like, thought leaders in everything. Like, yeah. People turn to them for columns, you know, and all that kind of thing. Like, now they're more... They're in a different kind of role now. And I definitely think, like, some of the ones that have been around the block a few times maybe aren't ready for that kind of scrutiny. And not that they, you know, that doesn't excuse them saying terrible things, but I also think they probably just, you know... They can just exist on this kind of platform above everyone else. They're not checking Twitter. They're not checking the Facebook comments like we are. By the way, Leonie, you wrote your Chris Rock review.
Yeah. I've been avoiding the comments. So
they're not good. I had a read. Not great. Comedy fans, in ear quotes, are somehow like the most sensitive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, is it because that things that you find funny is quite close to your personality?
I think so.
And so people feel personally attacked if you, like,
because if you're saying something is tasteless or not funny, then you're basically the people who like it. You're saying that to them as well.
Yeah.
And so if there's a lot of people that like Chris Rock then and liked that show, then I'm basically saying to them, you're all sexist jerks.
Yeah.
Mm. When, you know, really the point of a review is just to, like, convey one person's experience. And I don't think it's unreasonable, as a modern woman, that I didn't enjoy having a rich dude yell at me about how all I wanted was money from men. I don't think that's unreasonable.
But also...
I don't think it's funny.
The crazy thing is, like, even if they just read it as you going, this guy's being sexist, misogynist, and they can still accept that and still say... Oh, well, I laughed at it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought it was funny, but actually, it probably was. You know, because I laugh at shit I'm not supposed to laugh to all the time, you know, but I'm not going to go out and, like defend it in public.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's a way of framing offensive shit that is, it's still super offensive. Like, Sarah Silverman's jokes about abortion, like, I'm not precious about that because there's just a way that people make themselves the punchline. And that's the problem I had with Chris Rock is he never makes himself the punchline because the ego's too big.
Yeah.
So he's I'm not sitting there super ready to be offended by any means, although I'm sure that lots of people who read that review think that I am, and I'm just fucking not. I don't like people who don't know how to laugh at themselves because I just don't think that that's what comedy is. I think comedy is where, like... And I do think jokes about abortion can be funny.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I was still on board when he was making jokes about, like, punching black kids in the face as well. Even though I thought even some of his race jokes are a little bit, like, lazy and, like, Dave Chappelle does them better. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you can't. I did think one of the comments that someone left was something like, if you don't like jokes... Don't go to a comedy show.
Yeah. Or if you still haven't figured it out, it's a comedy show, not a church sermon.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know about you, but it felt actually like I was being preached at. Yeah. So you can direct that comment at fucking Chris Rock and not me.
And that brings us very nicely to some more angry comedy fans. which... Fans of 7 Days in this country are livid. Not just fans, also people on the show, about a story that the spinoff published. Where basically all we did was point out some data that the 7 Days Twitter account had published themselves. They had gone through all the panelists, all the regular panelists, and done a kind of a tally chart about who was on the most successful team the most. And I do that in air quotes because it's all made up and the points are like, you get a million, you get nothing. Anyway, so... There was also some other interesting data in that table that was kind of a lot more interesting than who was winning, which was how many women they've had on the show and how often within what they consider these regular appearances. So we at the spin-off crunched some numbers, took it to the data lab.
Made some graphs.
Made some real bad graphs, redid them and passed them on to Mad because I couldn't figure out how to change the colours.
And then we got the maths wrong and then we redid them again.
And we checked it all and then we published it and it's kind of, everyone kind of lost their minds a bit at us because it basically turned out to be, of all the appearances that were on that table, women came out at 16.1%. of the total. So that is an incredibly bad statistic for a show where they have seven people a night. And you know, I watch 7 days frequently and there will only be one woman if you're lucky.
Yeah.
I'm sure there have been one on each team before, but that's a rarity. Yeah, exactly. But the internet didn't take to it very well. As far as we were concerned, we were just pointing out something that was It was the funniest thing as well because it's something that we already know. Like, it's not like, shock, horror, there aren't many women on 7 days. It was just like, oh, we actually have some data now.
Yeah. You thought from you the were show seeing a woman.
Yeah.
But really, there's another man.
Yeah. And people, the top comment on this Facebook page, and I am really sorry if you don't like us going through comments, but I think it's like, it's quite telling because I think sometimes you can get sucked into this world where you're like, oh, yeah, everything's great and everything's fine.
Yeah,
and
that's true. We're
doing really well. And then you just see how much vitriol there is out there. And the subtext of all of these comments is that these people just don't like women. Because they say that there's the classic comments about female comedians and people saying, oh, spinoff, gonna do an article about how there's no woman in the All Blacks. Oh, yeah. And that's got like 100 likes. And
it's
like,
just... It's really stupid. It's just quite a dumb sentence to write.
Yeah, it's
it doesn't make any sense.
It's a cell phone, and he doesn't even know.
I also I get very surprised, kind of on a daily basis. Like the spinoff, since it was born, is a humble TV review site.
Mm.
You've been on it on the spinoff, writing for the spinoff since the beginning, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
How are there people following the spinoff on social media that don't expect the spinner to take this stance on absolutely anything when it comes to women? Like, I mean, that's why On the Rag exists, and you've always had that voice on the site. You have always called stuff like this out from the beginning of time.
Mm.
So why are there hundreds of people following the spinoff on Facebook who find that weird or shocking?
Maybe they've been asleep. I don't know.
Yeah, or it's like new fans who follow because of one article that, I don't know, could be anything that's just not a feminist article. And then they think that the whole site is that, and then suddenly, I've done that before. I read one article and then I follow something. I'm like, I don't like the rest of this, and then I unfollow.
That is really interesting. I mean, and I guess, the Herald, everything has the same problem of a site's representation now is mostly through social media, I reckon. Like, most people aren't visiting the homepage of the spinoff. We know that.
Mm.
So it's the posts that go big or go viral or get a lot of engagement that people start to see,
mm-hmm.
which is why maybe a lot of these people haven't seen this before or only see the quote-unquote feminazi coverage and have just absolutely had it up to here.
All these women talking also, as if they have the right.
Shut up! 16.1%, it's too much.
I mean, it's the same as the population of women, right? Oh, no, it's fucking not. So there's quite a lot less.
There's just been some amazing arguments ranging from people who are just like, it's because women aren't funny, you can't get a female comedian who can make you laugh. You're like, don't say comedian.
First off, number one.
So it goes from that end of the scale to people who also crunch the numbers, people who have like downloaded the friggin' all the registered comedians in New Zealand and compared the data and been like, actually, it's very representative. And it's like,
when do you register to be a comedian?
I don't know, the guild.
I think the site was literally like comedy.co.nz. Comedians A to Z.
I appreciate the effort, but also that doesn't mean that doesn't matter. Like,
because the thing is, if 7 days... You know, they said 7 days is a launching pad for so many comedians. Well, then it would make sense that if you only have 60% women, then the comedy then scene is going to be 16% women.
Launch. Exactly. Yeah. And as Michelle, who's not here with us today, pointed out to us, that you only get good at stuff by doing stuff. Mm. You can only be good at being a comedian by by doing comedy, and you can only be good at being a comedian on television on a panel show if someone puts you on television on your panel show.
Mm.
So, like, you know, for that reason, things like quotas are a really good idea, because it's not so much about who's available as your intentions for your product. In this case, the product being 7 days. Like, totally. If you think you are some kind of industry leader, then fucking lead your industry.
Mm. And also, I just think about all the, like, any young woman out there thinking about getting into comedy who will see, you know, the lack of women on that show, and then see these comments. And that's the part that makes me feel real bad about running these kinds of stories when this kind of vitriol comes out. And imagine what that would do to you, just seeing that many people go, oh, it's actually fine because you only need one because they're too screechy, Ellen Duff.
Yeah.
And all that kind of...
Good callback. That's a comedy thing right
that's
there.
That's a comedy thing. it's just been an interesting and instructive... week, I think, for that kind of backlash, and just seeing we're just nowhere near done with this work yet. And when I say work, I mean just literally existing and being and daring to do things. I hope to see more women on 7 days, because it's kind of, people say, you know, there has been talk on Twitter about another female lead panel show, for example, but that only lasted one season, and 7 days has been going for, what, 8 or 9 years now. Like, that is an institution, and you do have a responsibility. You can't just be like, oh, it's just our blokey Friday night.
Mm.
It's like, that's trailing straight off Graham Norton. Who's not watching that shit, you know?
Yeah, like, totally.
And also, like, loads of, Michelle also sent us an email with a couple of points about 7 days, and she had said that, especially in the early days, it was really massive with middle-aged women. And so, I mean, why not make it more representative of the people who are watching? Yeah. Why not just broaden your audience a bit more? I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like, especially now, people who watch 7 days and have watched it for 8 years, they know what it is. And I feel like they're going to be very forgiving, and like, that we have to actually use that word, if suddenly there were two women on the show 1 week. I think they would be able to handle
out in their hundreds of thousands and leave you hanging. Yeah, like, oh, exactly. We've killed the show. We knew this would happen if two women were allowed to be on it.
Yeah, so we'll just keep tabs on that. But numbers don't lie, and we stand by what we published.
Yeah,
as doctors of math.
Yeah. And the BBC has quotas for women on their panel shows now.
Really?
And they are more popular than ever.
Yeah. Learn something.
Mm.
Got to sell the CC and dry, though. Is that still their sponsor? Maybe it's
some
kind of pie now. I don't know. Women like pies, too. Should we change tact a bit? Has anyone got any cool tips for the month?
Oh, shoot.
Shoot. Oh, you didn't mention this before. I would have thought about it.
I put it in the doc.
Oh, sorry. As you can see, I do not have the doc on me.
Because if you don't, I have a conundrum to put to you.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, caller.
So we're all writers here. We've all interviewed people before.
Mm.
I did a interview series recently in Wellington, and part of doing that involved me having a photographer, which I've never done before. I've never had that as a situation when you're interviewing someone and being photographed at the same time. It was totally cool. He was a really cool guy. It was all great. And I want to stress that it was a great experience. I just want to flag this as something that happened, not like a call out, just a, oh, okay. Every single interview, without fail, me talking to my subject and the photographer over there snapping pictures, the subject would start talking to the photographer.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's not good, right? And
it's
I felt like I had to physically broaden myself, and also do like weird little, I developed, because it happened the first couple of times, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe everyone's, because everyone in Wellington is so super nice as well, that I thought maybe it was just everyone trying to
include
be inclusive and whatever, and that could have been it. So I just wondered, like, if you've ever experienced anything like that, because I genuinely felt like I had to sometimes fight to get the attention back to me, and even just like making a, like going blah, 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 and like getting attention back.
Loud noises, look at me.
Yeah.
Had the photographer like gone in and talked with the subject before you did? Or like as in,
And that was even another thing that I realized.
I experienced that same thing on photo shoots.
Right.
Because at Mana, I only worked with like a handful of photographers, and they were all men.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened quite a lot. Because I would, same thing, I'd quite often do the interview while they're being photographed.
Yeah.
But there have been some friends of mine that just work in like totally different industries as well. Like if there's a meeting, like a friend of mine who works in the music industry told me about this like years ago now, where, you know, she had an intern, this young guy that was working with her. So she was like, you can sit in on my meetings for the week, whoever it's with.
Mm.
And every single person she had a meeting with just started talking to the intern. They just can't, you know, like the, and like the intern barely said a word, but the interest and the attention just automatically went straight to the guy in the room, even though it was a meeting that she had organized and was leading.
Yeah, I really felt that. And like you say, when we would meet them for the first time, I had to be really conscious of putting myself in front of him, like literally puffing myself up like a pigeon. Like I must have looked really weird. But I was like, hello, it's me. Like trying to be the big, because he's, you know, he was like a tall man and I'm just like a little idiot. Yeah. But yeah, it was just something I've never encountered before, and it was a new,
That's,
you know, you're trying to interview someone, but you're also conscious of this, the drift that's happening. And I, at first I thought it was just like the first couple of people for some reason, but it was men and women, everyone.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just don't know. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but and it didn't even get in the way of my work, you know. Yeah. That's the thing with these kind of really subtle things that happen, is it's not even reason to complain. And if I was to bring it up with either person, I'd have no idea what I'd even say.
Yeah.
I would sound, you know, if I was like, don't talk to each other, please.
Don't look at him.
Look at Mike.
They'd be like, okay, you need to calm down. But honestly, by the last interview, I was kind of quite racked up about it.
Because you were expecting it as well.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, and there it goes. And now they're talking about surfing. And now I'm just sitting here with my recorder, like, doing nothing.
Did you do the, like, I like ball sports too? I'm interested in the sports.
No, I just did like my real professional thing, which is just to retreat inwards and get really moody and don't talk to anyone, which is hard during an interview.
Do you have any more questions? No.
No.
Not anymore.
Didn't have any anyway. So I don't know. If you've experienced something similar, as Leonie said, I don't doubt this happens just constantly.
Constantly. Yeah. Yeah. No, I've experienced that. And it's weird when you are already naturally quite shy. To have to, do that, you have to find ways to pretend to not be as shy as you are.
Yeah.
Or pretend, and in your case, it was to try and make yourself
big.
Bigger and taller. So strange.
I have not had that, although I had one thing that happened. I mean, this just popped into my head as the only thing I could think of that's even remotely close to that. But when I used to apply for jobs on student job search, and they would have these one-off jobs, which always paid the best, and with just one day, so it's perfect. And I would be sitting at home, not going to lectures, just refreshing student job search to be the first one to see the ads when they popped up.
Oh, yeah.
And this one came up that was like, need help painting a house. And I was like, this is me. I've painted so many houses. I'm on it. You know, I've got all the qualifications. Like, no one has qualifications in painting houses at uni. So I rang up, and the person at student job search has to determine whether you're a good candidate before they give you the thing. And so I rang up, and they were like, you know this is for painting a house. And I was like, oh yeah, that's what I used to do, like every summer holidays would go. So then, but then he was fine. He was like, okay, cool, you sound like you know what you're doing. And he like, I guess the people he'd ask had like questions, like trick questions to ask, like interview questions. So he goes, what do you do before you do anything when you paint a wall or something? And so I had to give him this long as like overcompensating. I was like, well, first you got to wash it with sugar soap, and then you got to sand it, and then you got to make sure you get the primer right and stir it, blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, I don't actually know the answer, but.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was like, well, why did you ask? He goes, well, they're allowed to give you questions to ask, and I didn't think you'd know the answer. I was like, anyway, so then he gave me the number, and I called up, and they were like these young guys.
Mm.
And when they answered, and I was like, oh, I'm just calling, I got your number from student job search, blah, blah, blah. And then just immediately, before asking any questions, he just goes, oh, sorry, we're actually looking for a guy. And I was like, oh, well, you didn't say that on the ad. You just said you needed someone who knew how to paint rooms, and I know how to do that. And he goes, oh, and I just think it's more of a guy's room, more of a guy's job. And I was just like, okay, cool, see you later. Bye.
Fuck.
And I was just like, are you allowed to do? Are you allowed to do this?
Definitely not.
Totally illegal.
Yeah, and then I was.
Let's track these people down. Yeah,
and then I think I made
livid.
Yeah, I think I made like a some sort of Facebook thing because I was always just all my Facebook status were just complaining about things at uni. So I made one, and then my cousin from the States commented, going, "I'm pretty sure you can sue him." And I was like, I don't know what the legal things of student jobs are. It all seems pretty shady to begin with, but yeah. So that was just an interesting. Because some job descriptions will say, like, preferably a guy, and that'll be if it's, like, moving company, heavy lifting. Mm. And even then, like, some of those I would just still apply for because there's some really weak guys out there that probably applied. So I was like, well, I think I can apply for that anyway.
Professional javelin thrower Madeline Chapman but, could beat they ace.
But, like, but this one was just, I was like, no, nothing there, just apply if you have experience. I'm like, all right,
yeah,
this
man. Yeah, it's in the fucking house.
Yeah. And I was also like, I could do it really quickly. If you, like, I was like, I'm fast and good, and you know, you'll save money. No, just.
That's just more looking
you
for
must
a
possess
guy.
A penis to hold a paintbrush. Yeah.
What if you had done the interview
the
like with one of those like voice changer Darth Vader masks on is, and been like, hello? And just giving them a big fright.
Showing up with my painting mask already on so they can see.
It's me, Matt.
So how many years ago would you say that was?
That was when I was in my last year of uni, which was 2014. Not that long ago.
Not that long ago at all. So why? Is this coming down to some kind of like ruining the banter thing?
I honestly think that was more, it was like three guys going to paint a house. They need another guy to, you know, go along. Mm. And maybe they were just like, this is going to be weird. I need to look after a girl.
So she might bleed everywhere.
But it happened. Like it happened with heaps of things. Like I did one where I cleaned windows, and it definitely was not health and safety, whatever. Mm. Because it looked like you were going in on the ground floor, but the street was like on a cliff, and so he goes, "So you just walk out on the scaffolding, and you walk around and you clean all the windows." But when I walked around, I realized I was maybe like six levels up, and it was just scaffolding. And I was like, I don't really like heights that much, but I already agreed to do it. And then the guy, you know, when I showed up, because I think the owners of the building had organized it, but one of the residents just had to let me in. And then I showed up and I was like, just here to clean your windows. And then he looked at me and he goes, are you sure you're okay with heights? And I was like, I don't think being scared of heights is a gender thing, but...
But yes.
And yeah. But I was like... Yeah, fine. I was like, sure. And then I cleaned those windows so fast.
Oh, my God. I feel like we could reignite this Mad Tries to Get Tradie Jobs.
It would be quite
see what happens.
True. I've got a friend who's a carpenter that just had to start her own business because she was sick of being treated like a piece of shit by other tradies.
Has no one seen the block?
I know. It's sort of
like a double loss as well because my... cousin who does work as like a tattoo artist, which is one of those professions where you go and you go, I have no idea how to do this. So there's sort of an immediate respect of like, you're doing something that I can't do. Mm. So whatever. But then he went and filled in as like a doing lawns and stuff. And he was like, man, people talk to like their gardeners and stuff like they're pieces of shit. He was just like, they have no idea what qualifications I have, but if I'm showing up to cut a lawn, or just do something in the backyard. Yeah. They're sort of just like, meh. Yeah. You know, like, you clearly don't know anything or whatever. Because it's that thing of like, I can pretty much do this myself, but I'm choosing not to. So if you're doing this for a job, you must be, you know. And so when
worthless.
So then when you have like, and it's sort of the same with painting. Because I did like a couple of those painting jobs for student job search.
Mm.
And the people would always sort of go, it's pretty, you know, they had that like, I also know what you're doing, but I just have decided to pay you to do it. But then they'll come in and they're like, what are you doing over there? Well, something that you have to do to paint the room? And they're like, oh, okay, all right, yeah. But it's like, there's that sort of dismissive, like...
mistrust.
Yeah.
Sheesh. We should bring it back on the rag segment.
Yeah. I like doing those jobs. They're good.
When you can get them. Voice changer, mate. That's all you need.
If you're not being told outright, you're not allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a real weird.
Which is illegal. Ladies and gentlemen, listening to this. Unless you require someone with a lot of strength to do a job, it's actually illegal to tell someone they can't take a job with you because they don't have a penis. Okay, just so everyone knows that and is clear.
There's a lesson. What about watching and reading this month? Does anyone have any good recommendations?
I have lots, actually. Yeah, I was sick with the flu that everyone else has had as well, that seems to be going around and felling people like trees. And I binge watched a lot of Netflix, as you do during that time, and I watched all of Grace and Frankie. Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda comedy buddy series about two women whose husbands are partners and legal partners, and in their 70s they both tell their wives that they're leaving them for each other. So they come out of the closet in their 70s, find love together, and then that's the first episode, and the premise is how these two women basically navigate life as single women in their early 70s, whose whole lives have been defined by their marriages and their children. And it's so freaking good.
Right.
It's really funny, and it's quite sort of deliberately provocative in terms of, like, you know that people are going to be scandalized by, like, two women in their 70s, like, talking about vaginal dryness and sex toys and stuff like that. And it's really great. But then it actually is, like, quite a beautiful look at female friendships and how women support each other through really tough times. Because it's a comedy, but it's also, like, super honest about how painful the end of a marriage can be. Mm-hmm. And then the sorts of, like, questions of identity you have to ask yourself after that. But then it's just got all sorts of, like, delightful, like, characters around the edges and lots of, like, partying and drug taking, and Lily Tomlin is just like the greatest actress of all time. So yeah, I really recommend it. It's an easy watch, but it also is a bit of a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of feels.
Sounds great.
A lot of post breakup feels.
Yeah. Is there more than one season of that now?
There's like three seasons.
Whoa!
Right. It's also the first TV show I've ever seen that really gives people over the age of like 50 like a sex life. Do you know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Really honest about it, and they had their sex scenes, and like everyone's sort of like looking at dating and being honest about what sex at their age is actually like, and it's a real celebration of it. And I just thought that was really cool.
That's so cool. I was just trying to think of like if I've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah,
I feel like it's just, you know, that like the comedy grandma in Adam Sandler movies. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, yeah,
exactly. It's just a dirty granny.
Yeah.
But they're just like regular humans. Yeah. It's nice to see on television.
What a revelation.
Hmm. Also, the story of the two men coming out together at that age and having to figure out how to be in that world is also quite touching.
Yeah.
But you sort of find yourself really conflicted because you're kind of angry at them for like lying to their wives for so long. So you kind of can't help but take the woman's side. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, you're like, but you've been living this lie your whole life because you didn't think you could be yourselves. Anyway. Grace
Sounds
and Frankie on Netflix now.
I've also been watching Glow, which I know you're
so
a fan
good.
Of. Mad if you watch Glow.
I watched first episode. I enjoyed it.
What did you think?
I liked it. I didn't know what to expect because I had no idea what it was about. Mm. I just saw the lights and the thing and clicked on it.
The lights and the thing.
Like some sort of pet. Like, lights.
Like a moth.
But then I'm kind of worried. Like, I try not to start too many shows at once. Otherwise, I do that thing of watching, like, five episodes of every show and never finishing anything.
It's quite a short season, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's 10 eps or something.
Oh, God, is it? Oh, it just means that I just watched them in some kind of fever.
I finished the season. I can't even tell you what happened. Yeah. But I've enjoyed every step of the way.
It makes wrestling look like a lot of fun and like achievable as well. Like
when they did that thing where they had to do the flip,
yeah,
and like obviously that's very hard. And the guy did it, and I was thinking, these women, like, they can't do that. Like, no one can just do that when you say do it. But then by the end of that scene, I was like, I think I could probably do that flip. If someone just pretended to flip me, I could probably do that.
It made me have the same like Wonder Woman thing. We have like a physical response to be like, I need to fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Like now. Well, that's, or I need really, to learn like,
yeah, it's really a few moves. Weirdly empowering watching them do it well.
Yeah.
As well at the end of it. You're just like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I just love the training montages. If you don't know what this is, sorry, we're talking about the show Glow, which is about, is it the first ever like televised women's wrestling league?
So the gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
The gorgeous ladies of wrestling in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of just about the kind of ragtag bunch of women assembling under Mark Maron's.
Oh, Mark Maron playing himself.
Playing himself, I think.
And it's just, it's quite an easy watch, I think.
It's not quite an easy watch.
It's not too dark.
The documentary that it's sort of based on, well, there's a documentary about the people that it's based on, I guess, which is also called Glow. And I think that's on Netflix too. Quite different from the TV series. Mm. A lot of people are like, it's so much better than the TV series. But they're always going to be completely different things because the characters are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But the documentary is also amazing. I definitely recommend it.
And you've got a book with you, Leonie.
I'm sorry. Yeah, book club. I have read... Holly Walker has done a book for Bridget Williams Books Texts. It's called The Whole Intimate Mess. The BWB texts are sort of like a series of quite short books that Bridget Williams does. Sometimes they're chapters from like a bigger, fancier book that they've released. They're always nonfiction, and they put them out quite regularly. They're a really great idea. I just think that Bridget Williams herself was actually a bit of a publishing genius, because there's like quite a few book publishing companies of a similar size to hers that have just all died over the years. But she's just got like major hustle and is really innovative, I think. So I think the BWB text was like a really amazing way of like saving her publishing company, basically. So the latest one that's just come out is by Holly Walker, who's a former Green MP. It's called The Whole Intimate Mess, Motherhood, Politics and Women's Writing. And basically Holly Walker left her role as an MP to concentrate on her family, and she also at that time decided that she would only read books by women for a year. So the book itself is sort of talks about I guess what she learned from doing that, and the way that she sort of reset the world, I guess, in terms of thinking about you know, what it is that she looks for in a writer, and the priorities, I guess, she's always had. But it's also quite a, like an amazing story about, like, her life and motherhood and, like, super messy, and she writes about it really well. It's really cool. So I recommend that to people who...
How do you get that book?
Where do books come from?
What is book?
I think you order them on the Bridget Williams website, actually. They're really cheap. They're really small.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've read two of these Bridget Williams texts in like one sitting before, because they're quite short.
Whoa.
This is a full
length thing that they've put out. I mean, essentially they're mini novels or long essays, or essentially, you know, that's how short they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shout out. Have you got anything else to recommend, Mad? I need some holiday reading.
I was very late on the Joan Didion train, but I went on like a frenzy a few months ago and ordered, I think, maybe all of her books and all of Nora Ephron's books. And now people walk into my room because they're the only books that I have, just because I moved recently, and they think that like I only read like feminist essays. But they're both sort of just examples of women writing, one, in a time when, like, it was sort of not as common for women to have strong opinions about things and write about them, and two, being very much for a cause, because they both wrote through the, I'm going to get this wrong, third wave feminism?
Second, I think.
Maybe both.
That era.
And were huge sort of leaders, but also weren't afraid to criticize certain aspects, which did not go down well at the time. But when you read it now, you go, this is very balanced. You know, like, there's one by Nora Ephron that I can't remember. I think it's just called At the Women's Convention, where they had this big idea to organize this huge women's convention that was going to sort of be organizing the movement, getting everything ready. And she went to it all excited. And I think she was supposed to write about how great it was and sort of just realized that actually it was just a whole mess.
Oh, no.
And like a lot of movements was not organized well. And people was, there's a lot of political sort of like certain leaders wanting to get ahead of everyone else and things like that. And she wrote that and it just got absolutely slammed. You know, she was sort of like, well, you're not.
Yeah, bad feminist. You
don't, yeah, you don't want to be part of this, this and this. So, but I thought, I really liked reading that because if you're reading it with like a level head or whatever, you can see that she is ultimately trying to be like, we should be doing better. You know, we should be doing this and this. But if you're sort of already a little bit angry or whatever, it does read like she's just going, these women can't organize a convention, you know, so...
So but what you're saying is the Twitter ID has existed for a long time.
No, but she wrote a really good one. There's a few that are available online, and her essay about breasts is one of my favourite pieces of writing ever. So I suggest
I think you lent me that book that's in, maybe.
I would suggest that you Google search Nora Ephron breasts.
It's a great Google. I'm doing it now.
I think that was the first, which was quite brave. She had a column in Esquire. And she was the first woman to have a column, and her very first column was an essay all about boobs.
Nice.
Because it was a predominantly male readership. But it's very good. I really liked it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I haven't read much Nora Ephron. She's one of those people I've been meaning to get around to for a long time.
I've basically been trying to imitate her since I read her books, and it has not been going well.
Hey, she's never produced a podcast.
That's true.
We have a horrible story that came out today, but I don't even know if I want to talk about it because I feel like I'm in a good mood now.
Roll. Rat roll.
This is the Lions. We're in Auckland, and some of their fans in a kind of a mob yelled horrible things at some very young gymnasts from the ages of 12 to 16 in Kingsland who were doing like a public art performance. And it's not really a surprise to anybody, I think, apart from, you know.
Apart from everybody.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to bring it down. But it was a disgusting, horrible thing. And I hate to spin off and read about it. I also don't want to put it all on the Lions and the Lions fans. And I don't want the story to do that because I do think that is something that everyone is responsible for. And I think New Zealand also has a massive problem with toxic masculinity and street harassment and all those things,
easier to imagine people away from home
exactly
misbehaving being a bit unleashed because you know those girls are our girls, so I can't imagine that the Kiwi fans were as terrible as. I mean, the story basically says it was mostly people dressed in red, but as you say, you can't blame it just on Lions fans.
It has sort of brought out, which, I mean, you're sort of aware of, anytime you're going to do an opinion piece or criticising a certain thing, you have to be so careful with the language, because if you say one thing and it sort of comes across how you didn't, you know, how you hadn't meant it, people just sort of jump on that and forget the rest of it. And so with this one, people are jumping on one. It was all Lions fans, so it's get them out of the country. Someone was like, register them as sex offenders.
All Lions fans.
And then the other thing is rugby. People are like, well, this is what you get with rugby. But it's like,
right.
I think,
it's,
you know.
It's bigger than both of those things.
And but people are going, well, it's rugby. It's just rugby. It's just rugby.
Rugby is. And the woman who wrote it, I think more correctly identified it as being a problem with drinking as well as, you know, horrible misogyny. But
yeah. We, I want to move on to sporting success with women, because I know, Leonie, you had a shout about this on the couch the other day about...
Freaking ticker tape parade.
The America's Cup parade.
For another male tomorrow. Sports team, and we just have so many amazing women that, like, regularly win international competitions, and they never get a parade.
Never get a parade.
And what's interesting is that that is one of those things, you know, people like, people just don't watch women's sports, yada, yada, yada. But things like the Olympics, where people don't seem to care that there are women competing.
Yeah.
It's like, every medal weighs the same, so exactly. we're going to, yeah. But everyone loves parades for some reason. So if you chucked on a parade for a woman's team, people aren't going to go, oh, that's a woman's team. I don't think I want to. I don't think I want to join in the fun.
That's
people
true.
Are going to show up. It's a parade, yeah. You know. And that's just another easy way to kind of slowly edge people over without them realizing it.
Parades for everyone.
But no, it's like sort of just the same. Same old.
It just seems really arbitrary that it's the sailors. I mean, I just, I guess it's because I didn't watch a single race and it didn't even really touch my world. I think maybe the marketing wasn't that good this year or something, but it really, I know people watched it, but it did not seem to be that big a deal. And as a sport, I don't consider it like one of our big national pastimes. Even though I grew up in Devonport, where everybody sails, like I still don't think of it as like a big national pastime. Yeah. So why do they keep getting parades?
Well, that's what people are saying. They got to put more money into sailing so we can get kids into sailing and, you know, more kids need to be sailing. And we were trying to, I was talking to Toby about this the other day, we were trying to figure out why more kids don't sail. And I was like,
few of them live near the sea.
I was like, it's really expensive.
Yeah.
But then people were going, well, but no, it's not that. You know, like there are costs, they said there are costs in every sport. But I was like, yeah, but if you go and you want to be a runner, it costs $0 to figure out if you're a fast runner or if you're a slow runner.
Yeah.
If you want to be good at soccer or basketball, you don't have to spend much at all to figure out if you're shit at basketball.
Yeah. Mm.
But you could spend $1,000 before realizing that you suck at sailing and then you just wasted $1,000. So I don't think parents are going to be like, let's just try it out and see how
and
you go.
Stick with it, you know?
Yeah.
We'll start a pledge me. Maybe it's the big cup.
Like the actual size.
Everyone loves a big cup.
Wanting to see the big trophy. I don't know. I'm trying to push aside, you know, devil's advocate. What if it's not sexism? What if it's not that people just don't really want to pay any attention to women?
I mean, it's not like I think enjoying sailing, there's anything wrong with enjoying sailing. It's just weird that it gets so much more public celebration than most other sports, other than rugby and the All Blacks.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it is also... Rugby's sort of similar as well, but it's like you get to sit at home and watch some good old Kiwi blokes like being smart and being physically active, you know, like it's like the perfect storm of, oh, these guys are doing something. You know, it's all sort of like also this is a practical skill. They know how to sail on the water.
Yeah.
Whereas watching even just other sports, it's very much like this is just a sport happening in this arena that no one else knows about if they're outside.
Yeah.
But this one, you're like, well, they could go and sail across the world if they wanted to. They're good. This is so Kiwi ingenuity at its finest with some would-be farmers.
Castaway situation.
Ingenuity and literally billions of dollars to get there.
Maybe let's try a parade then.
Yeah.
We'll have an on-the-rag parade.
The thing is,
the women's rugby team.
Are they going to get a parade?
Women's rugby.
I don't even know if they've got a news story.
I doubt it. They won fucking 5 World Cups without anybody noticing, so I can't imagine they're going to get a parade anytime soon.
They have 5 parades in a row.
The thing is, how expensive are parades? Because if they're not getting any funding, then it makes sense that they're not going to spend money on a parade.
Can we make a parade that is my Mazda Demio and a trailer driving up Queen Street and you two are the only people?
And we just sit on the back and wave?
Yeah,
I'm in.
I'll go to that.
And we'll just have a banner that has the name of every single female athlete and sports team that has won an international just competition. It's going to be a really long banner.
Someone's going to throw a tomato at you.
Oh my God, actual tomatoes. Yes. How did these tomatoes appear in my bag in time for me to throw them at that sad three-person lady parade?
It's not a parade, it's just a car.
A car driving slowly.
Really slowly, holding up everybody.
Right, and then they're like, typical woman drivers. Can't even drive on the road with a trailer. Never trust a woman with a trailer.
Swerving area. Oh, okay. No, it's good to have a project. That can be our project. Let's finish up with the Yas Queens of the Month. Who wants to go first? Leonie's looking scared.
She's looking nervous.
I'm just trying to narrow it down.
Okay.
See, it's weird because it's like I've really talked through like the TV shows and the book that I've enjoyed the most, and I kind of just want them to be my Yas Queens.
They can be Yas Queens.
Okay. Also, my Yas Queen for the month then is Lily Tomlin. She's such an exceptional comedian.
Comedian.
Oh, I have one.
Female comedian, yes.
Tuwila Blakely.
Hey! Nice one.
I have sort of gone backwards by reading the most recent things and not understanding what they were about.
Right.
With like...
Oh, yeah.
Her son sort of posting his own very good Facebook status about everything, and then her mentioning that she wasn't going to apologize, and I was like, apologize for what? And I was like, what did she do? And then turns out it wasn't really anything.
Together.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was like, surely this is not... Now. Yeah, I was like, surely this is not still a thing that people, A, care about, B, would get angry about or vocal.
Mm.
But it is.
But it is.
So, no, she was... Yeah, she's cool.
That interview she did was amazing. She is so cool. God, she's cool. Yeah. Every time I see her in public, I remember like I've seen her at like different like kind of like opening night kind of things, and she's always just like having a little dance. Like she's always just got like a little bit of boogie in her, and I love that about a person.
Yeah,
she's just so cool. And yeah, that interview, I think there's like a video as well that goes with it. You can see some of the interview that she did with, I forgot her name, the journalist at the Herald, and
Something. It's got a D in it.
Henwood. yeah, we'll put that on our page actually. That's something we should be looking to do. And that's probably us for June. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you to Leonie and Mad for joining me in the boardroom of dreams. Meet us at the bottom of Queen Street. We will be doing a three-person parade.
It will be happening at the same time as the America's Cup parade. Yeah. And you won't know who's there for who.
Yeah.
But it will probably be about half and half.
Exactly. And if you want to sponsor us, please do. We'd really like it. All right. Bye.
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 Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.